said, I worked for him one summer doing tours for his campaign culture at Pratt Institute. He had, a slightly jaundiced idea. He said he was not interested in recent history, such as Weeksville. He was interested in ancient history in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, you know, it sort of said that this Weeksville thing is not of any importance. And I couldn't agree with that, that it, we didn't think it was, you know, earth-shaking importance, but it was filling in a little hole in the knowledge of African-American population in Brooklyn in the 19th century. And that was important. It wasn't tremendously important, but it was, it was a part of the history of the community. And we thought it was worth doing. He didn't. I think later he changed, but I'm not sure, because I was not in touch with him. And he was along the lines of the Black Panther Party. I worked with Black Panther Fred Richardson, who died. He ran a bookstore on Nostrand Avenue, and he was not a radical himself, as I would interpret the Black Panthers. But he joined them, and he was my assistant at in teaching at I taught as a life skills teacher at Bedford-Stuyvesant. I can't remember the name of it. It was at the Y, a program to train community kids, males 17 to 21. An experimental program. It was well financed, and it didn't have a residential element, but it was organized to provide training in restaurant, automotive, and one other area. And I was in the general education part of it as a teacher for one or two years.
But do you understand Barbara Jackson's, Les Campbell's, and Robert Swan's perspective at, or their disagreement with you being the president of the organization?
I can see that. It did seem somewhat strange, or even me being there as a white living in a black community. I sort of stood out. Mm-hmm. And some people didn't like it that I had, you know, got favorable publicity. And whether I understood their perspective, Robert Swan, Les Campbell, I'd say his perspective was skewed. I didn't have any argument with the Black Panthers because I didn't have much to do with them. But I didn't see that because I was white that I shouldn't be doing the research. And Barbara Jackson also seemed to have that, that because I had gotten a position as president of this group, and that was Dolores. I didn't want to be president. And there was a meeting when we were first organizing the society in the apartment of Judge Williams. And we trying to find a name for it, and Dolores was the one that came up with the name, and she thought because I'd been in it from the beginning and had sort of started things, that I should have the honor of being president. I disagreed then, but she railroaded it through. So, see, obviously we had a good relationship, and still do. Still, she's one of my best friends, and we're both getting at the end of the line now, but, and she's closely related to Pat. I mean, they're intimate friends, mm-hmm. and have been since mm-hmm. their early years. So I'm not sure if I understood the perspective fully, because I appreciated Robert Swan, you know, his research ability was exceptional, mm-hmm. and I appreciated what he did. Maybe not always his interpretation of what he felt was the sum of his research, or his feeling that the Weeksville organization was just a bunch of social ladies, mm-hmm. Including Joan. No, I didn't appreciate his perspective.
Okay.
And Les Campbell, I guess you need radical activists. And I can see they had a place to push the struggle forward. But they were radical. And Barbara Jackson eventually went to another, I think the American Museum of Natural History, as an assistant to one of the curators. But I didn't follow track of her. I think she died not too long after she got that job. Mm. But I didn't really understand. She was... she was not one of our better directors, I don't think. We had a guy named Rodney Toner, and there was some scandal to that one. He had another job, I think, as I vaguely recall. And he had two jobs at the same time, I think. So I can't say I appreciated Barbara Jackson. I don't know if I can answer your question that I understood their perspective. She had come from Africa, mm-hmm. so she'd been director of a project. And she maybe resented a white person being in a position of authority over her, over anything she did. Not that I had much authority, but as president of the board of directors of what she was heading, I did have some say. And we never clashed, actually, but she teamed up with a lady named Marguerite Thompson, who made a lot of... She did her PhD at University of Mass on Weeksville. She's a teacher at PS 243, the Weeksville School, mm-hmm. and created quite a program. Weeksville ambassadors, kids being named Weeksville ambassadors and being sent to England or some foreign country. And she made a whole thing out of Weeksville that was her personal creation. Mm-hmm. Joan got along with her, but I did tangle with both. Here's where I did tangle with both Marguerite Thompson and Barbara Jackson, because they created curriculum based on what life was for black people in Flatbush in earlier times. And they used a text of a white woman living in Flatbush in the 19th, or I don't think it was 18th century, I think it was 19th century, so like a social history of Flatbush. And it didn't apply to black people. And they applied it without any big explanation that this is how black people lived in the 19th century. It was how people in Flatbush lived, and they were generally well-off white people from a Dutch background. And I did tangle there that this was not, and the whole society got them, as I recall, we didn't allow it to go without it being said that this was the social history of a white, well-off white community, and this is not perhaps how the black community lived in Flatbush in the 19th century. So we did have a somewhat unpleasant, and I think the Weeksville Society made the objection, and Pat Johnson was involved in it, and we either stopped that particular part of their curriculum from being implemented, or I can't remember whether we stopped it or just required them to say that this was not verbatim, this was not documentary history of any section of a black community that lived in Flatbush. We don't know. We didn't. We said nobody knows. We haven't seen any evidence of what it was like. Mm-hmm. We would love to have such evidence, but no one. That particular history was not the evidence, mm-hmm. and we didn't think it should be passed off as the evidence of a legitimate evidence of a black community in Flatbush. There was probably a black community in Flatbush, but there's no documentation. Mm-hmm.
So how did the society envision the hunter fly houses being used to convey a narrative?
The kids of 243 initially got very interested in these little houses, because this was after my time. But I remember Wilson Williams was somehow tied into that school. I can't remember whether his wife worked there or he had a part-time role there. And I remember taking pictures of a fair, festival, and the kids, I'm not sure, it could have been partly through Marguerite Thompson, but, or maybe other teachers, and early on they got very interested in these little houses. And they sort of adopted the school, the houses. And that was a big push. I don't know whether it was in Joan's time. Joan was heavily involved with that, I think. And there, the fact that the kids were so interested in the wooden houses was a factor. The kids had been involved, of 243 had been involved in the landmarking of the houses as well. And they appeared at the city hall to give testimony that perhaps had some influence in actually getting them made official city landmarks, in addition to testimony of Loring McMillan, the historian of Staten Island, who came over for the Landmark Commission to give his idea, his opinion on the importance of the houses in New York City history. So the kids had an important role in eventually making the houses a historical center. By then, that was the 70s. I was sort of out of it, working at the Long Island Historical Society. Though I, some of those years, I was still president, and I was always a member of the board into the 90s, I think. So, what was your question again?
How did the society envision Weeksville being used, given that some people were applying the history of Flatbush to Weeksville, which is incorrect?
Right.
I was curious to know what was the right way the society envisioned?
Well, the houses were so unique, being on a colonial road, you know, on off the grid at an angle. And then we started the Brown, Muriel Brown, and her sister, Bernice Jenkins, were early on the board of Weeksville and very actively involved. And the fact that Loring McMillan testified to their uniqueness as the only houses still in use, remnant of a colonial road that were from an early period, even though 1840s or 50s, whatever they are, 60s, was not that early. The community just thought it was, they were so unique looking and historically valid as something from the past of approximate Weeksville time, that I don't think there was ever any resistance to their being the center, future center of Weeksville exhibit museum, because they were the only unique things of that period that were still remained, and they were picturesque. So I think there was general support of the community for them being made, you know, the center of a historical focus, of a historical exhibit, museum, whatever. Eventually how they became the site of the Weeksville project, it just seemed a natural thing, and we of course raised the money to buy them, because they were owned by the Brown family, or at least one or two of them. And Weeksville, the Bedford-Stuyvesant Corporation, Restoration Corporation, bought them from the Brown family, two of them at least, one or two. Muriel Brown lived in the one that's on Bergen Street, and the other three are at the angle. I don't know. I can't remember how what their ownership was. But Weeksville had to raise the $30,000 or $40,000 to buy them or it from the Restoration Corporation, which they did. Mm-hmm. So there was never any resistance, as I remember the procedure, even though I was out of the mainstream then, 80s, 70s, late 70s and 80s, when it happened. So I think there was general support because they were sort of unique. They were unique. And they were the only things that we could tie to the period of Weeksville. And they were picturesque, and it seemed like they would be a natural asset for a future Weeksville Society Center of History.
What are your hopes for the future of the Weeksville Heritage Center?
Well, it's moved so far beyond our hopes, you know, having a funded new building. I think Joan could imagine it, but I couldn't. I mean, I think it's wonderful, mm-hmm. but it was far beyond my hopes. I didn't know any. I hoped that it would remain as a research project into the history of the black population and all of the populations of that area, not only black. That's another point. I have hope that they will not exclude the history of the groups that also lived in the general area, Irish, Germans, other ethnic groups. So I never pushed it, but I have always hoped it would be the organization that would illustrate by its research, reliable research, how the black community existed there and how the other communities that were adjacent existed and what their relations were with the black community. So that's my personal hope, that it's not only the black community, but that the other communities living in that general area that probably related to the black population living there, that they'll not be ignored, at least. That's has always been my hope. But that the black community needed it more than any other community. They needed to have light shed on their living in this community more urgently than the other groups, Irish and German or what, Jewish, whatever. So that I still hope that it will happen, but I wouldn't make a big fuss about it. It just that it should emerge as a goal.
Okay. Why do you think the need was so urgent to have Weeksville tell a black narrative in that community?
Why is it so urgent to have Weeksville?
Why do you believe it's so? The need was so urgent. You said it was urgent for black people to have Weeksville.
Well, it's just to have the community fully documented as the existence of a free black community that came into being after the ending of slavery in New York. And sort of became one of the largest black settlements in the country, in Bedford-Stuyvesant didn't grow out of Weeksville, but Weeksville was there before what is now known as Bedford-Stuyvesant, a majority community, a black majority community, one of the largest in the country, I guess. And how this little community came to be, and how it existed, and with its institutions. It seems to me just a microcosm of larger black communities, and when African Americans weren't very much recognized as having legitimate settlements and communities in the mid-19th century. So I thought it was as the Black Power movement got going, that we just happened to come upon these little evidences of a community being there long before Black Power was even thought of. And they got along, and how did they get along, and who were their leading people, and what did they do, and how did they solve their problems, and how did these institutions prosper or not, like the cemetery eventually failed. I mean, not failed, but the city overran it. We don't still know that much about it. So that's interesting, I think, for the city, for the history of Brooklyn and New York City. What happened to the cemetery that was organized by local black businessmen? So that's why it seemed that it was somewhat urgent to find out, you know, how this little name settlement came to be and how it existed and why it passed away as a named area. So that's what I think, and I hope that the Weeksville effort continues. I haven't kept up with the research, what they've done since our time. You know, very interesting things like whatever has come to be known of the baseball team they had, the Weeksville Unknowns. We only had a couple of newspaper mentions of them, and there's been a lot of black history, black research done about black baseball teams and the black leagues, but I haven't seen anything more about this early, you know, the 1850s. There was a baseball team there that we came on one little mention of it in a Jamaica paper, Jamaican Queens. The Weeksville Unknowns beat the, or were beat by the Jamaica All-Stars, two black teams. And I remember going to the Baseball Hall of Fame and researching, trying to research it, not getting anywhere. But I figure sooner or later somebody's going to find some interesting things about that. You know, some details. We didn't have any details, just a mention in a newspaper clipping. And the fact that it's mentioned in the draft riots of the 1840s, as people fleeing to Weeksville and some other village, from the violence in